Lawmakers moved to address job licenses for DACA recipients. Gun bills halted in both chambers, but not killed off. That, plus Todd Rokita's first TV ad and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 2nd, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, House lawmakers took steps to ensure recipients of the federal immigration program, known as DACA, will be able to receive and renew professional licenses.
The Professional Licensing Agency recently changed its applications to better comply with a 2011 state immigration law. The move meant thousands of DACA recipients were barred from professional licenses. An amendment approved in a House committee will allow people to receive licenses as long as the federal government allows them to work, which is DACA's purpose. Governor Eric Holcomb says he didn't know about the change made at PLA until he read about it in the media. He says he supports the legislature's plan to fix the issue.
Are you confident this problem will be solved? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Katzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, is this an example of things working exactly the way they're supposed to? The executive and legislative branches get together to fix this problem?
I hope so. I hope it's fixed. I mean, the original statute in 2011 was a joke. And so that this clears it up, and Representative Clear put this piece of legislation forward, so I'm sure that he's looked at it from all angles, and I'm hoping it solves the problem. People, the Dreamers are here legally, at least for the time being, and they ought to be able to earn a decent living, and if they're qualified to have a position that requires a license, they ought to be able to get it. And Indiana should not be denying it to them, so I'm hopeful that this piece of legislation will fix that.
So far, it easily passed through the committee. It went to the floor, got a minor technical amendment on second reading, and now it's headed to passage next week. Are you surprised at just how easily it's going so far?
It's a pretty common sense solution. It's a fair solution for Dreamers who are here. It was a big week for Dreamers. The Supreme Court essentially eliminated the March 5th deadline for DACA to expire, and so that'll just continue until Congress acts. Governor
Never.
Holcomb. And Governor Holcomb this week, when he kind of took the lead along with Representative Clear and Chairman Kevin Mahan to get this fixed fast and make sure they did it the right way, pretty much said that. Said, look, I mean, we're for these people. We need to approve these professional licenses and renew in some cases where there was some conflict in the law where they were kind of left out in the cold. But Congress needs to do something because it's incredibly unfair right now that. There is no clarity, really. I mean, there's clarity now. At least there's an assurance from the federal court that said, all right, well, the DACA as a policy is going to continue in perpetuity until Congress changes the law, right?
But there's always that sort of thing hanging over their heads.
Well, yeah, now they got to go deal with. Now they go try to renew their professional license, and they're a professional who's been licensed most likely in the state of Indiana. And now they go to get. Now they got a problem there. It's like we've got to provide clarity to these people, and it's just unfair the way they're being treated right now.
Like I said, so far it's moving very smoothly through the House. It still would have to go back to at least the Senate one more time. What's your sense of? Are you confident? It's going to continue on this easy path?
I would think so. You have the key players, as you mentioned, Brandon, coming together both in the executive branch and the legislative branch. So far, and this is a good thing, but there hasn't been any grandstanding on an issue that you could argue lends itself to grandstanding. If you want to score points with certain elements of your constituency, probably going after any notion that you were giving people, and you use the words, you know, amnesty, or we're, you know,
we'll
allowing
a little bit more about that later.
And so that hasn't happened to any degree. And I think, given the alignment and the backers of this, we might see a little bit. It's so tempting. It's red meat for some people. But it's good to see that Indiana can act in the absence of federal action on this issue.
When Eric Holcomb came into office, we talked about, is he a Mitch or a Mike? Frankly, to put it frankly. Would this fix, and the way it's happening so quickly and so far so easily, would this have been possible under the previous governor?
I don't think so. I think he's proved himself in this situation to be much more of a Mitch. The situation arose, and he and the legislature took steps to fix it. Now, it still was a tough week for Governor Holcomb, because when this story broke, the headline was states denying these licenses, and it really threw it at the administration because it was a administrative rule that caused this to come up. So the professional licensing agency said, we're enforcing the 2011 law. So it fell into the governor's lap immediately from a bad news perspective. And then we find out that the governor didn't know that this was happening in his professional licensing agency. And so I would guess that there has been some new channels
you would
of
hope.
Communication established there. But so. In that case, you know, the governor's done a good job of responding, but he got himself in a position that he could have avoided.
But it's taken leadership like he did quickly and acting quickly that is giving him his own definition. That this Mitch Mike thing comparison was fair in the campaign, and it was fair in the early parts of the administration.
That's
to
a
this,
good point.
To this degree, he's made some controversial decisions. Go back a year to Keith Cooper, some like stagnant decisions that really hadn't any, and you hit them hard and you hit them early, and then situations like this that you maybe don't expect, but you decide what's the right thing to do and go get it done. And I think that's ultimately going to be Eric Holcomb's brand.
Your suggestion is that Mitch and Mike should say which one's more like Eric and turn it on its head.
We should all strive to be more like Eric.
Well, Republican leaders say they halted gun bills in each chamber this week to avoid debate on several gun regulation proposals.
There were several proposed amendments to the gun bills on everything from banning bump stocks and assault weapons to barring those on the terror watch list from possessing guns. Senate GOP leader David Long says the majority party didn't want to go through those debates. He says the amendments were purely political and designed to force embarrassing votes. Democratic Representative Ed Delaney says Republicans are scared of the debate, of their voters, and the NRA.
Mike O'Brien, is it okay for the Republican leaders to avoid this debate like this?
Well, I don't think we've been debating gun access and background checks and licensure and all these things for now years. I mean, and these pieces of legislation specifically have been debated going back into the middle of last summer. So I think what they tried to do in this, what Republican leaders did in this situation is said, look, let's look at the current situation and this tragedy in Florida, and maybe it's not the right time to kind of have this debate on the floor. Certainly when you could see there were 18 or 20 amendments that were going to get fired at it, and really made out and really an attempt to make
from both marginal, parties,
from both parties, from yeah, both absolutely, parties, yeah. Maybe we just need to hit the pause button and tap the brakes on this conversation right now, given what's happening elsewhere, and given how this debate was going to turn sharply right or sharply left if they would allow that conversation to take place.
Was this a prudent step given the charged nature?
It was. Chicken is what it was, okay? I mean, they are in the thrall of the NRA. These were expansion provisions that the Republicans were proposing. Make more guns available, easier available, less having to do the licenses so frequently, all of that. They were going to push more guns out there. And that is exactly the wrong message. All of the national polls show that the proposals that were proposed, like Kerry Hamilton's on the bump stock, is even supported by Donald Trump. Okay? And when you talk about...
At this minute.
Yeah, it may change.
Let's check our watches.
It could have changed since the last
Who's
time I saw
to
the
him?
News. But the point is that you have overwhelming support for that. You have overwhelming support for military-grade weapons not being in the hands of individuals, not having unlimited magazines. The terror watch list people can still buy guns in this country. And on top of that, the mental health aren't addressed. What they did is they had an opportunity to do something meaningful in Indiana, and the cowards that they are kowtowed to the NRA and pulled the bill because they didn't want to have to vote against what their constituents actually want to have happen. I mean, the polls show that a majority of Republican voters support some of these reasonable, common sense regulations, not to mention independents and Democrats. And they didn't want to run counter to those people, nor did they want to really irritate the NRA.
John Katzenberger, by leadership, was this a calm step backwards or kowtowing to the NRA?
Well, clearly it depends upon your perspective. But I do think that they wanted to avoid the debate on the floor. And so in doing that, they can say we pulled the regulations that would have expanded access in some cases, and we are taking a break. Really, I think we're at an interesting point in time. My observation is that the NRA is turning increasingly desperate. It's apparent by their rhetoric and how they've ratcheted it up at the national level. that they're very concerned because they are seeing a turn and an increase in the polling that Ann mentioned, and they're seeing a renewed activism from people that you wouldn't normally think of, and that is specifically the students in the wake of the Parkland shooting. So I think that we're entering a period now where we aren't certain where things are going to go. It used to be a pretty predictable argument. That's not the case anymore, and it'll be interesting to see what happens next session when it comes to gun bills and what the tenor and nature of those bills are.
Now, the two gun bills that they halted are not dead, and they're talking about some of the provisions from those bills maybe being revived in conference committee. So are they really avoiding the debate as much as they say they are?
I do think they are. Keep in mind the General Assembly this session, it's on final approach. You know, it sees the runway, and there's not really much desire at this point to, even though these bills have been in the pipeline, because of what happened in Parkland and because of the attention that came about because of it and the uncertainty and the sort of, you really do have to follow it almost minute by minute, the changes in this. You have an airline like Delta withdraws from the NRA, and then you have the legislature in Georgia saying, well, then we're taking away the fuel incentives for you. And now someone will probably penalize the state of Georgia. I think John's suggestion that, I don't know if it's cowardice, but you kind of want to, before you venture off in something as profound, perhaps, as fundamental gun change, you want to kind of let it settle just a bit.
This is exactly the time to do it.
If this were the case, if we had a full-time legislature, year-round, as some states do, then I think that's a different animal. Yeah. But when you already have,
and there's also an election between now and next session, so we'll see if that changes the math
at all.
Yep. All right. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: are Republican leaders avoiding debate on gun regulations, or just trying to, in Senator David Long's words, manage the process? A, they're avoiding debate. B, they're managing the process. C, both. Or D, neither. Last week's question: is allowing teachers to carry firearms in school a solution to America's school gun violence problem? 13% say yes, 87% say no. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Republican Congressman Todd Rokita released the first TV ad of his U.S. Senate campaign this week.
Rokita's campaign ad gets straight to the point.
The liberal elites disrespect our flag and the sacrifices of our soldiers. They riot in our streets and attack our police. Welfare dependency, open borders, amnesty. It must stop.
I'm Todd Rokita, and I'm running for Senate to fight the politically correct politicians.
Rokita goes on to describe himself as pro-life, pro-gun, and pro-Trump, and calls for building a wall and making English the national language.
John Ketzenberger, is Rokita delivering exactly what primary voters in the state are looking for?
Well, he sure hopes so, because he has continued to go all in. From the moment he started his campaign and aligning himself completely with President Trump, at every juncture, he's put all of his chips into the table, and he is completely invested now in this ultra-conservative, very fundamental position. And, if conditions change and he makes a bad calculation, he could end up losing badly. But that's the thing. It's a high-risk, high-reward situation. He is banking on the ultra-conservative voter coming out in big numbers in May, and that it'll be able to overcome his two primary opponents and win. So we'll see whether he's right, but I'm telling you, this is as extreme a position as I've seen, even in a primary. It's pretty amazing.
I talked to some people who describe this in part as almost a parody of a conservative Republican
Saturday Night Live.
Republican ad. In that way, is it a good ad?
I was looking for Willie Horton somewhere to make a cameo.
Yeah,
in the
Earl
in the
Warren, too.
It does suggest, if you get the textbooks out of recent history and you find look up wedge issues and you find the list and you say, can you get me some archived video from, and you go down the line, welfare abuse and
amnesty.
Amnesty. And so it is. And I agree. He's all in on that approach. What I think makes it take some of the risk out for him, and I agree, nothing's normal anymore. Under normal circumstances, that would be risky. But keep in mind that the two opponents he faces are trying to go for the same group. It's not as if he's the outlier.
Yeah,
they're all trying to be the most conservative. So if you had If you had Dick Lugar and his clone in the race with Todd Rokita, then the Rokita strategy is all or nothing. Here, since it's sort of variations on the theme, it's not as risky. Now, it could come back to haunt, certainly.
I do want to ask this. He mentioned something in this ad that I really sort of first heard him mention in a big way at the debate we talked about recently between these candidates, which is English is the national language.
That's an oldie.
Yeah. What do you
it's
make
not
of,
a goodie either.
What do you make of putting that one in this race?
Probably no one else is going to do it, so it kind of gives you kind of a an extra gold star with the conservative base voter here. But I think what you are not going to see an ad like that from Mike Braun or Luke Messer. But that's what Todd Rokita has said all along. He's willing to fight harder than the other two against Joe Donnelly, and how negative that's going to be, and the national money, and all the and the effort that is going to have to go in to next year. He's willing to fight that much harder. So I think the tone and the posture he's taken throughout this campaign has been consistent. His, you know, his position on these and putting these issues front and center has been consistent through that. So that's really what I got from that ad, more than talking about English as the national language. It's really kind of his, how aggressive he's being and that message he's trying to convey.
To that end, then, this is the first TV ad of the campaign, and if he wins the primary, he'll have several more months of these sorts of campaigns. Where do you go from here?
It's a race to the bottom. I think he's already there, and so is Braun with that last ad that he put out. I mean, this is disgusting, okay? It's a dog whistle, red meat kind of ad on issues that nobody cares about. Nobody's even debating English as the national language, okay? It is de facto, all right? And by the way, he has a national cemetery pictured in that. That's against the law.
It is the way he does it.
So he's a law
violator. It is technically not against the law because it's stock footage. He did not film it.
Oh, I see. So he got somebody else to do it for him. Otherwise, it would be illegal. That's good. That's a good little needle to thread.
It is a terrible ad.
And the Rokita campaign has said that if they are asked by the VA to take that image out, they will.
Oh, okay. And the same way Braun was asked by the widow of the picture that he displayed to take it out, and he ignored that as well.
You'd have to take that up with the mic.
Wonder what we'll say about Luke Messer's ad next week.
Fight, I think, is too kind for this anymore. I think that these are dog whistle, red meat issues, and they're divisive, and they're going to come back to haunt him in November in a way that we can't even begin to appreciate.
Or not.
Well, independent consultants investigating the Department of Child Services have identified significant potential shortages in the agency.
The consultant's second public update shows possible challenges in legal representation, worker qualifications, and services. The consultants stress feedback gathered so far doesn't mean the problems identified are statewide issues, but they say they've seen a lack of services, particularly for substance abuse. There are also questions about whether current caseworker qualifications are sufficient preparation for the job.
Speaker Brian Bosma said these issues aren't a surprise. Should we be comforted by that?
I think we should be comforted to the extent that those who thought that this investigation by the outside consultant would somehow be faked or somehow skewed to cover up problems, it puts some of those concerns to rest. Now, does it point fingers at some issue? I mean, intuitively, we can assume that when there are problems, it means probably not enough staff. Maybe the staff they have aren't trained well enough or equipped well enough.
Or there aren't enough services.
I could tell you that. Any of us could say that sitting here.
You could have done that?
Maybe.
Just to clarify that.
But the point here is, and I've said from the outset, I don't see any political gain for the Holcomb administration to try to pretend that there's no problem, because he'll be prosecuted, figuratively speaking, every time something happens.
So if you're Brian Bosma, aren't you, with this statement, we're not surprised by this, we've already given a bunch of money to them, and they have all the authority to do everything they need to do. Is that not then a bit of a condemnation of, then why hasn't it already been addressed?
Oh, I think so. I think at some point you better be surprised by the outcome, or the question then becomes, why didn't we do anything if we understood and knew what the problems were? We still got study to go. We still got information to find. And hopefully they'll be able to dig it all up and address it completely. But I do think it's a little concerning that, you know, these things are seemingly obvious and haven't been addressed to this point.
The consultant, the lead consultant, when he addressed, when he briefed the media, really stressed he didn't even want to do this briefing. He said, this early in the process, what we're telling you here might not be statewide issues. It's just what we've heard so far. Are they starting to try and, like, downplay the results of what the final results might be?
You know, I don't know what their objective in doing that was or saying that was. But what's amazing about this is, you know, the Republicans bill themselves as the party of business and they can run things and all this. They're a two-trick pony. They want to cut regulations. They want to cut taxes. That's it. Okay? And what this shows is they can't manage. 13 years they've been in control of this. They have super majorities in both the legislatures, both houses of the legislature, and they have the governor's office. And they can't manage. Okay? This is a disgrace. It's been a disgrace. It was identified by Mitch Daniels in 2008. And we're now in 2018. And look where we are. It is absolutely incumbent upon them, and all of this is just to delay it because they don't want to spend the money. They'd rather cut corporate taxes.
It was actually 2004, and that was when we hired 800
more
caseworkers.
Sure. Yeah,
we
sure
traded.
We
traded an agency only
me.
To focus on this because no agency existed on its own to address this before.
But what Brian Bosma says,
and we've increased the budget exponentially since then.
But what Brian Bosma says, we're not surprised by these are the issues. We know they're the issues. Doesn't
why
that leave you more open to, well, then why aren't you fixing them?
I think two things. I think the one thing that wasn't mentioned in the lead-up was the consultant came back and said one thing that we really do need to answer is why do we have twice as many kids in this system in Indiana than we do in any other state? Why do we have more kids in raw numbers in Indiana than surrounding states that have twice the population? So that leads into what the speaker said were some of the obvious problems, which is overworked caseworkers, lack of training, maybe they're getting into the field too quick. But the reason for that is the numbers are so huge.
Yeah.
We've got to push.
And that is something they said that in the remaining we won't get another update until the final report.
Well, I think Governor, and I think the reason the consultant came back and said, look, we don't even want to give you this update. The Governor Holcomb insisted on this being transparent that the legislature be kept up to speed. But if you're doing the study, you kind of want to do the whole thing and then report. You don't want to kind of offer a window into it along the way.
All right. Well, health care providers across the state will be subject to new reporting requirements when it comes to complications from abortions under legislation approved this week by the House.
The bill creates a long list of potential abortion complications physicians, hospitals, and clinics must report to the state. It includes everything from blood clots and cardiac arrest to anxiety and sleeping disorders. Proponents say it's a public health measure to ensure women are protected. Opponents say abortions have lower complication rates than wisdom tooth extractions and tonsillectomies, and that the bill is intended to make abortions seem more dangerous than they are.
Anne Delaney, is simply reporting abortion complications really an unnecessary burden?
Of course it is. That's what it's designed to be. They want to say that the risks involved in having an abortion are so great that they require separate kinds of reporting. That's what it's designed to do. They're trying to get at the right to choose without being obviously unconstitutional, which is the way they've approached it so many times in the past. So that's all it's designed to do. They're not concerned about women's health. If they were concerned about women's health, we wouldn't be trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act, which provides coverage to so many women. We wouldn't be trying to defund Planned Parenthood, which provides health care to so many women, poor women around the world and certainly around the state of Indiana. So they're not concerned about women's health. They're concerned about trying to make choice not a choice.
Past abortion laws have tended to impose regulations on abortion clinics, abortion doctors, abortion facilities. These requirements are going to be put on regular hospitals, regular doctors, regular clinics across the state. Will that rub people the wrong way?
I don't think so. They're already doing that in so many other areas. I mean, the USA Today this week and then the Indianapolis Star today released metrics on ambulatory surgery centers and the problems they're having nationwide and the deaths that are occurring at some of these hospitals. We haven't had the report found we haven't had deaths in Indiana, but we have had violations for not keeping enough of certain drugs on hand. Are they doing preventative maintenance on machines and other? So the reporting requirements on hospitals and providers and clinics already is substantial to the Department of Health, so we
what
can
about
monitor
doctors?
Quality.
I want to
so
ask this. Part of the bill, part of the bill also mandates an annual inspection of all abortion clinics, the sort of things that are not mandated for hospitals. Is that a step too far, too?
Well, again, the medical community, they don't speak in one voice, but I think there is a concern that there is an intrusion of government in the medical practice. And keep in mind that physicians who would have to report potentially not only were they not involved in the initial abortion, say, but they could have been not even born when the abortion took place. In 30 years, somebody has sleepless nights or anxiety or depression. Yeah. And it's not just immediate physical impact or hemorrhaging.
No, it could be
somebody, again, who was not even born.
Yeah.
And it's a fascinating issue. And if you want to hear more about it, I would say watch Indiana Lawmakers on
radio stations.
This is what we devoted the whole show to.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Anne Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.